CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
First, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. Also, Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter. And we'd also like to thank the American Heart Association. To learn more or join in helping all Americans, call 1-800-AHA-USA-1 or visit heart.org.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, we are brought this excerpt by CFO.com, the article that is entitled, When No One Is Looking. And this is essentially a message to CFOs that honesty is a virtue only when it's accompanied by integrity. And the article is written by Bud Kaliza. He's a contributor. He's a CMA, CFM, and Dean Emeritus of the IMA Leadership Academy and former chairman of the IMA. Goes along these lines. When living in my home state of Texas, one becomes acutely aware of what's known as the Code of the West. No written version of the code has ever been found, but the unwritten one served as a guidance for winning respect and surviving out West. As John Wayne famously said, a man's gotta have a code, a creed to live by, no matter his job. Few phrases are more applicable to today's CFOs who are often obliged, another good word from the West, to be a moral compass for their organization in order to command respect. But while honesty and integrity together have an enormous positive impact, when one exists without the other, says Bud, the result can be quite the opposite. Honest and integrity are not synonymous. In Who Moved My Cheese, author Spencer Johnson writes that integrity is telling yourself the truth. Honesty is telling the truth to other people. And when practiced with a lack of integrity, honesty alone provides a very poor example for others to follow. Interesting article where Bud describes him having worked in an environment that was very open, information readily shared, including discussions as to how we might make certain issues just go away by doing whatever it takes, in quotes. There was a lot of honest talk that provided visibility into significant differences in integrity among the participants, and there was a notable lack of shared values. Discussions revolve around how we might push the envelope in our own resolution process by just doing enough of the right thing to get through without raising concerns. We discussed only the minimal requirements, and beyond that, it wasn't what was said, but it was what wasn't said that was the problem, says Bud. What exactly should be done was left to interpretation, and if some interpreted it incorrectly, then that was their fault. It was not reinforced that whatever it takes should include only good business practices in compliance with laws, regulations, and company policy. It all created significant risk for the people involved in the company. Having integrity, on the other hand, means firmly embracing the values of the code you follow without exception, whether it is the Code of the West, the ethical standards set forth for your profession, or the value imperative established by your company. Walk the talk. And thank you to CFO.com for that contributing article. Well, today we are joined by Carol Fudge. She is the Chief Financial Officer for the American Heart Association, the Greater Southeastern Affiliate Division. And Carol is a certified public accountant. A little bit about her background. In the position she holds today, she performs the duties of Chief Financial Officer for the affiliate in the Southeast. In addition to finance, she has oversight for facilities and technology. Carol began her career at the American Heart Association in 1998 as manager of affiliate financial services, where she ultimately was promoted to director. She then assumed additional role managing the financial reporting department and overseeing the consolidated financial reporting. Prior to joining the American Heart Association, Carol worked in the wireless telecom industry in Dallas, Texas. She holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Texas Tech University, is a licensed CPA in the state of Texas, and also has a Master's of Business Administration degree from, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Abilene Christian University. She is married and has two girls and lives in Dallas. Well, Carol, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Lorraine. I'm happy to be here.
Well, before we get started, I'd like to do a little bit of a plug for the American Heart Association, if we can, Carol. The American Heart Association is the nation's oldest and largest voluntary health organization dedicated to fighting heart disease and stroke. The mission is to build healthier lives by preventing, treating, and defeating these diseases, America's number one and number three killers. American Heart Association funds cutting-edge research, conducts life-saving public and professional educational programs, and is an advocate to protect public health. So with that as our backdrop, Carol, my goodness, the responsibility of being CFO for a portion of that, and certainly for the Southeast affiliate. Let's start at the beginning. Let's learn a little bit about Carol. What was your first job and how did you arrive at your first position and the position that you're in today?
Well, thanks, Lorraine. And, you know, that takes me back a ways. After graduating from Texas Tech in Lubbock, I went to work for Frito-Lay in Dallas in the accounting department. After several years there and earning my master's and then my CPA, I felt I was ready for a change of pace, and I moved into the wireless telecom field as director of their financial reporting department. And they were a billion-dollar revenue company, and with the advent of wireless at that time, it was really a very fast-paced and exciting environment, I must say. I learned a lot during the 11 years that I was there, but at that point in my career, I felt like I needed a change and just a different focus. So I took off for a few months to get invigorated, and then I went to work for American Heart Association in Dallas, and that was over 11 years ago. I started out, as you said, overseeing the Finance Shared Service Department, and then was promoted a few times in various roles. And here I am today at Dallas working as the CFO for American Heart's second largest affiliate. You know, Lorraine, I've never looked back once I came to Heart. It is absolutely a fantastic organization. And I can truly say it's one that totally cares about its staff, its mission, and its volunteer base. And you know, what I like more than anything else about my job, Lorraine, it's not the accounting aspect, but it's really has to do with mentoring opportunities. American Heart is a strong, strong advocate of winning with talent. We strive to hire and retain the best talent. And I have found, Lorraine, through supervising, that one way to help drive employee engagement and employee retention is to mentor our young professionals, to find out what makes them tick, to teach them, to develop, and help them be a winner. And, you know, we have learned a long time ago, Lorraine, that bringing in top talent can really change and cement a company's future. In my opinion, that's the driving force to American Heart's success today. We really can't deliver a mission without strong staff and strong leaders. So that really is the aspect that I'm most excited about with my position as CFO.
Well, that's fabulous, Carol. And I note that you are a CPA. What particularly drew you to the path of finance, accounting, and then ultimately your position today as CFO?
Well, as an accountant, I knew that it was important to be a CPA just to increase my career potential. I think it's important for all accountants to go that extra step and sit for the exam. To me, a CPA skill set is valued and respected as the highest professional achievement in our field. And it certainly can equate to higher salaries and job promotions and just overall personal growth. So that's why I became certified. You know, to me, those letters behind my name mean that I'm the best in my field, and I get great satisfaction from that.
That's fabulous. And we do have guests on the show that have gone down the CPA path, and then we have those that may potentially have gone down the Treasury or the finance, FP&A, financial planning and analysis. They tend not to take the CPA. There are other designations that they may take. But I agree with you. CPA is definitely, you're one of a very few select people in the United States. Well, Carol, let's talk a little bit about the organization. You manage the finances for a very significantly sized nonprofit, and there may be some listeners that are not familiar with the mechanics and how accounting or finance works for a nonprofit. So we'll have some questions to draw out some elements of what exactly that means. Now, without divulging any confidential information, talk to us, if you will, a little bit about the challenges of finance in a nonprofit environment, with funds that are often coming from corporate or personal donations. How is it different in this scenario versus a for-profit environment?
Well, Lorraine, it continues to be challenging each year for us to raise funds for our mission, especially with the economic downturn we've experienced the last few years. Some types of funding are more difficult to raise than others.
What types of funding do you have? Do you get government grants? I mean, I've talked about corporate and personal donations. Are there other forms of income for you?
Oh, sure. In fact, we don't accept government grants. Most of our funds for our mission have to come from unrestricted funds. And they're getting harder and harder to find, partly because there's so many groups competing for the same dollar. Also, more donors are wanting to fund specific programs that interest them, like funding specific research. So one of our greatest assets is our volunteer base, and we use these supporters to go out and help our staff in the local communities raise awareness about our mission so that we can get these unrestricted dollars in the door. So we really are working with, you know, just the grassroots local communities to raise funds. We work with private foundations, individual philanthropic partnerships, and companies that really have an interest in our mission, helping their staff become heart healthy. So we really are trying to drive toward that unrestricted dollar to help fund the mission and fund our operations.
And you've mentioned some terms there that in the nonprofit world are so much like breathing, you understand what they are. But let's, if we can, explain them for the audience. Restricted and unrestricted funds, what does that mean?
Right. Well, unrestricted funds are funds that we can use for our mission. They're not earmarked for a particular intent by the donor. And temporary restricted funds, they may be restricted by purpose or time, but the restrictions are not permanent. As an example of a purpose-restricted gift is a strict for research grant to be funded, say, in the state of Georgia. An example of a time-restricted gift is a contribution of a trust or annuity or term endowment where the principal of the gift is restricted for a certain term of time.
And the donor is the one that asks for these restrictions. Perhaps as an individual or as a corporation, they want their funds to be attributed to X. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And then we go out and we determine how to fund those intents of the donor, and then we release those funds.
So in terms of accounting and finance, from the end of creation of chart of accounts, general ledger, the mechanics of accounting, what I would call operations, you need to separate those funds and any reserves affiliated with, I'll say, the cause, the project, that particular restriction, should we say?
Yes, that is correct.
So that brings a lot of complexities.
It does, and that was my biggest challenge when I moved from for-profit to not-for-profit, because it was very different. But we have an accounting system that really makes it so simple. It's more set up like a business unit and project classes, So really, once you identify your gift as restricted or unrestricted, then it's really easy to track that in our ledger.
And are you able within your systems to accrue the elements of that temporary nature, for example, time? Time-restricted funds, does that somewhat akin to the time restrictions on an accruals maybe?
Well, it depends on if your accrual is for unrestricted or time, but yes, we do have reports that easily segregate the gifts by time, and we have, like, receivable modules if it's a pledge, and it can tell you, like, when it's due and then when you can release the funds. So there really is a lot of mechanics behind the scenes going on to help us manage these net assets, but it's very simple once you understand the flow, and it definitely is something that we are able to manage appropriately for our donors.
Sure. Well, let's dig a little bit deeper into the accounting aspect of financing for a nonprofit. We've talked about one element. Are there any basic elements of difference?
Differences between for-profit?
Yeah. I mean, for example, do you account on a cash basis versus an accruals basis? Are there any differences in terms of the manner in which you account for certain costs or expenses or the way in which you track those items on the P&L and balance sheet?
Well, we definitely follow GAAP, and we are audited every year, so we definitely do have an accrual set of books. And other than the net asset classes, we are we follow the same accounting standards as a for-profit company.
So you have perhaps some elements of what comes into play for the IRS and external reporting through that, you know, the means for that. But you also have a GAAP requirement as well. And is that something that the American Heart Association has put upon themselves, or is that something that nonprofits, is there such a thing as a nonprofit GAAP, or do you just, my understanding is you follow just regular GAAP?
Well, we do follow GAAP, but there are certain standards for the nonprofits, certain FASBs that we adhere to. And because we are one of the larger nonprofits, we have always put it upon ourselves to have an audited set of books. And annually, of course, we file our tax return, which is called a 990, and we put that on our website along with our audit financial statement. So we're very transparent with the public, and they're able to see our numbers on an annual basis.
I understand. Now, from a controls perspective, obviously the size of your organization, with it being that you have an external audit, you will be focused on controls, but you're not required to follow Sarbanes-Oxley. Is that correct?
Yes, but we do have an internal audit department, and we have an audit committee. So we definitely follow all of the premises behind Sarbanes-Oxley. So we definitely want to make sure that we are run a very tight ship when it comes to internal control. So we are overseen by the internal audit group, and they report directly to the audit committee.
Fabulous. I understand. Well, let's talk a little bit about the financial statements. You mentioned about the Form 990 that needs to be filed with the IRS. What are the differences in terms of financial statements? Obviously, you don't need to file with the SEC. You're not a publicly held company. You don't necessarily have publicly held debt or anything that would be requiring you to file with the SEC. But you do file financials publicly. Talk to us a little bit about that process.
Right. Well, Lorraine, American Heart, you know, we have a very tight financial reporting process, just like any other large corporation. We close our books each month by the seventh workday and run our financials and present variance analysis. And then on a quarterly basis, we consolidate all of our entities' financials and report those results up to our national board. On an annual basis, you know, we, like I said, we have the external audit. And then once the audit committee approves the results, we file that tax return with the IRS and then post it on our website for public access. So we definitely are one that we want to have our numbers out there because we're very proud of running a tight ship and delivering the mission through the donations that we've received.
And is the Form 990 requirements and notes, if you will, as detailed as a set of financials with an annual report?
Oh, yes. They have actually updated the 990 form, and it's very detailed. And part of the reason it's so detailed is to help the public look at the data and make a decision for themselves on who is using the donated funds as appropriately as possible toward their mission.
And do you separately have something that would equate to an annual report, something that may potentially be a document that would be handed out to donors or potential donors?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I meant to mention that as well, that we do put the annual report on our website as well. So that's definitely there for the public. And they could walk into any American Heart Association office and request a copy of that, or they can download it from the Internet.
So realistically, you have perhaps very similar requirements from a public releasing of financial statements and documentation, and then you have an additional requirement that publicly held companies do not have, and that is to put your tax document out for everybody and in the world to see.
That's correct, yep.
Interestingly enough, publicly held companies are not required to put their tax documents out there.
Yes, well, I guess because, you know, we work so closely with the volunteers in the United States that they want to know how their dollars are being spent. So we're very happy to open up our books like that.
Sure, understand. Well, does a nonprofit have the equivalent of an investor relations team or department? And if so, how does your role coordinate with that function?
Well, in a way, I would say yes, we do, Lorraine. Our national office in Dallas does often get requests from the media and other sources that may require a response. So we rely on our national communications department to either respond or they assist our corporate officers or CEO and others to respond to the question. So it's not so much investor relations, but it's a type of media relations department.
Understand. And to that extent, because of the fact that you have so much information that is public and available to the general public, in that regard, any officer or employee of the company has to have the same, I would imagine, has to have the same level of awareness of confidentiality and releasing or leaking financial information that may not be aware or made public.
Right, that's correct. They do have to abide by, you know, certain rules, and we have to present the most relevant information as possible with the questions that are asked. So we do rely on their expertise in these responses, but we're as transparent as possible.
So in that regard, do you have requests to your department and to your staff to fulfill analytical or financial data reporting to the communications department?
The National Finance Department actually does. They work very closely with the media department in helping draft responses from a financial point of view.
Understand, and then it may come down through to you if it's your region, huh? Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the people aspect of the organization. A nonprofit often has substantial teams of volunteers, and you've already mentioned that the American Heart Association does too. I'm not sure if you use volunteers within the finance function, for example, but if so, please explain how the, if you will, the temporary nature of that works with the permanent base of employees on the volunteer side. I would imagine within as well as outside of the finance function that perhaps would take place. And then as an aside, perhaps you can educate the listeners whether there are any specific accounting or reporting requirements related to the volunteer or what I might call the free helpers that assist. There may be hundreds, there may be thousands of people donating their time. How does all of that get accounted for, or doesn't it?
Well, Lorraine, as it relates to finance, my biggest help and guidance from a volunteer perspective comes from the volunteers who sit on my business operations committee. I have a treasurer who's a CEO of a healthcare system. a chairman on the committee who's a senior executive at a bank. I have an attorney, a CPA, and other business professionals who bring many years of corporate experience to the table. We meet four times a year and discuss Greater Southeast Affiliates' operational challenges, and they provide a great way to guide me and counsel me with our particular situations that occur. We report out our results to our board quarterly, so there is a lot of volunteer and staff integration. The committee and our board actually are required to approve our budget, so even though they are volunteers, we integrate a lot with them. We rely on their expertise, and I like having strong business savvy professionals as a support team. So from finance perspective, these are the groups of volunteers that I work with. But of course, as you said, you know, we have thousands and thousands of other volunteers at the local level who help staff as well. But we don't pay our volunteers. You know, they freely donate their time because of their passion for American Heart's mission. If we reimburse them for expenses, say like mileage, we only are allowed to pay the IRS volunteer mileage rate of 14 cents per mile, and that's prescribed by law. Also, we do not record donated time on our books, as that's against American Heart's policy to do so.
I see. So in that regard, from an accounting perspective, I ask the question somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but because it's all based on the lower of cost and value, what has value might be determined on that in individual specific element. Lower of cost for you, cost is zero. And so there wouldn't necessarily be any recording of time. Is there ever any kind of recording of potential reserves associated with that area?
No, there's not.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so that is a little bit of a unique area for the nonprofit. You mentioned a little bit earlier about the systems. You have restricted and unrestricted funds, and you have to account for them differently, and we've talked a little bit about that as well as mentioning accruals. Do you have any particular aspects of finance, such as fund accounting, that requires different accounting treatment, and how do you manage that within your systems?
Well, as I mentioned, we do have to track our funds by net asset class, and our accounting software is with Oracle called J.D. Edwards Enterprise One, and our activities are set up by business unit and projects, and that is the way that we are able to easily track these net assets, which the net assets are the unrestricted and the temporary restricted and permanently restricted. So at the end of the day, you know, when you have your revenues come in and your expenses go out, they're all tracked by these net asset classes. So it's really very simple and quite streamlined and automated.
Fabulous. Are there any aspects of the J.D. Edwards and Oracle systems that you integrate, for example, planning and budgeting or fixed assets? I'm not sure if you might have inventory as such, but receivables, payables, is that all a fully integrated system for you?
Yes, it is. We do have all these modules built into the system, the receivables module and the payables. We have a budget module that definitely helps us with strategic planning. We have restricted module that helps us, you know, track those funds by types of codes, by donor. So we also have an inventory system because, as you know, American Heart has a CPR, and we have lots of inventory and materials that we have to track relating to our ECC program. So that inventory module is definitely one that we use quite a lot, and it's very helpful to track all that data.
And then also you have what I might refer to as specific projects. We're going to talk in a minute about one of the campaigns. How do you account for what I might describe as a specific fundraising campaign? Do you have almost a project accounting method to track the costs and profits on those events?
We do. And when we talk about business units, for instance, a business unit could be Go Red for Women. It could be our Start Heart Walk event or our galas. So once you identify your business unit, which would be, say, like Go Red for Women, then you could track all of the revenues and expenses associated with that just by that one little trigger.
That's fabulous. And let's talk a little bit about that then. One of the specific programs that I'm very familiar with, I've certainly been active and my company has sponsored one of these events, so it's very near and dear to my heart. It's called the Go Red for Women campaign. And I'd like to educate the listeners a little bit about this. One of the reasons that we have nonprofit CFOs on the radio show is not only to promote the good elements of the nonprofits that are out there, and certainly the American Heart Association is one, but also to be able to promote the different aspects and breadths of finance and accounting. And nonprofit certainly has a very strange a very unique, should I say, element of differences in terms of its accounting. So let's talk a little bit about one of the campaigns, and I'm going to talk about the Go Red for Women campaign. Star Jones is actually your national speaker for the campaign, and Go Red for Women invites women across the country to make it their mission to fight heart disease. One of the learnings that I have had is the understanding now of how significant in that the heart problems and can really be very, very brought upon very quickly. And in fact, heart-related issues can be very, very strong in terms of hereditary genetic disposition. But at the same time, it is the number one killer of women in the United States. And so with that in mind, I want to make sure that we educate and leave some element of healthy living for our listeners. And I'm going to read some information about the Go Red for Women campaign. Go Red for Women invites women across the country to make it their mission to fight heart disease. You can make a difference by going to the website www.goredforwomen.org to participate in the local American Heart Association and the events that they have, such as the Go Red for Women luncheon, which might be in your regional location. There is a Wear Red Day where women are invited to wear red and give donations to the American Heart Association through the particular campaign. And then a program called Go Red Connect event, which is an encouragement of networking and women to connect with other women from a business perspective. And you can encourage your company to become a sponsor of your local city's Go Red for Women campaign or personally donating to help fund life-saving research and educational programs that are needed to fight the number one killer of women. So this is something that is, I think, as a woman in business, certainly we all need to be aware of the elements of stress that has an impact on our heart. If you go to the goredforwomen.org and the Heart Association website, you can actually take some tests online that will tell you your preponderance or your likelihood for heart-related risks. And then you can take that information to your doctor. So any women that are listening out there or any men that have mothers, daughters, wives, girlfriends, grandmothers, please go check it out. And very much we encourage you to help reduce the impact of heart-related diseases in our communities locally. Is there anything that you might like to say, Carol, in terms of this campaign or any other campaign that the Heart Association is doing?
Well, I just want to remind the listeners that heart disease is still the number one killer of women, taking the life of one in three women each year. This means women just like you, mothers, sisters, friends, are dying at the rate of one per minute because they don't know what you know about heart disease kills. And I know heart disease has already touched many people listening today. So help us save a woman's life today. Make it your mission to stop the number one killer. Look us up online and see how you can help us with our mission today.
And just for the listeners, in wrapping up the show, we will have an additional website that you can go to specifically for the Go Red for Women campaign. Well, Carol, I hate to do this, and it's always with sadness that we come to the end of the show. Before we wrap up, we have one final question. We've got a tradition on the show to ask you, our guests, what is the CFO tip of the month? From the perspective of your seat in managing the finances of a nonprofit, what is your tip of the month?
Well, Lorraine, I've enjoyed speaking with you so much this morning. And to me, my tip is a little bit different from a legal aspect or from a finance aspect. And my tip is make it your mission to mentor young professionals. Your investment in them will pay off in a million ways, and that employee will remember you forever. So be a great role model in the workforce, and you'll never regret the time it took.
That is a fabulous tip, and if we have any young professionals out there that perhaps would like or need that mentoring, maybe the message to them is to take the steps and ask somebody a little bit more senior than themselves to perhaps be that mentor to them. Well, thank you very much, Carol. That's a great tip. I'd formally like to thank you, Carol Fudge, for being our guest today, for sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thanks also go to our contributor for the news article, CFO.com, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information, you can go to www.delaneyllc.com. Thanks go to Financial Executive International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. Their website is www.financialexecutives.org. We would again like to thank the American Heart Association and the Go Red for Women campaign. For more information, please visit goredforwomen.org or call 1-888-MY-HEART. The movement is nationally sponsored by Macy's and Merck & Co. Inc. Well, this and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. Thanks to listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.
Thank you, Lorraine.